Hey there, I'm Alice.
And I'm Maria, and welcome to our podcast. Today we got a fun question for you. What do a creative writer turned secondary school teacher and a computer scientist have in common?
So it sounds like a bit of a joke, but it's not. And we thought it would be a funny story to bring to this session today. So first, let's introduce ourselves. So I graduated in 2013 with a degree in creative writing and literature. And then I earned my PGC in secondary English Lit and Lang in 2014. So I spent a lot of time in novels and plays and poetry, like contemplating artistic meaning and how art has an impact on kind of broader society. And Maria, what about you?
Yeah. And in the meanwhile, I was in a very different place. I was typing on my keyboard in the tech world. I earned a Master of Science in Computer Science, specializing in artificial intelligence, machine learning. I studied in the University of Trento in Italy and University of Barcelona. And it meant a lot of time staring at my computer, wondering why nothing is working, how to fix bugs. So very, very different from what we are both doing right now.
And also very different from each other at that time. So creative writing and AI are not exactly peas from the same pod. But both Maria and I ended up reimagining our professional lives.
Exactly. So at one point, we each had a powerful moment of awareness, we can say. We realized that we weren't in alignment with our purpose or passions, what we felt we wanted to really be doing with our lives. And that awareness led us to change course completely.
Yeah, exactly. So if we fast forward to today, I am now a mindful art and creative rest facilitator. Mm-hmm. And Maria, tell us what you're up to.
I'm a coach and mindfulness meditation teacher, and I specialize in working with leaders and teams in organizations. And we decided to combine our superpowers to help others become more grounded and self-aware and intentional, both personally and professionally.
Definitely. And they are absolutely superpowers as well. So in this episode, we're going to be diving into our career transitions, the role of mindfulness, yoga and art and how they influenced our journeys, and also thinking about how grounding, self-awareness and intention can transform every part of your life, including work. So let's dive in.
Let's do it. So Alice, I'd love to hear a little bit more about your early career.
So I was just contemplating this before we got on the call. And then I realized that actually I don't have a short version of my story. So we're going to have to like bear with for a sec. But I guess that's probably the same for most people. So I think my early career actually starts when I was a teenager, because I was a professional modern pentathlete from 12 till 17.
Wow.
Yeah, it's literally, I've only just started claiming this again now, but it was like a huge part of my life. And I was funded and I went abroad for competitions and I had coaches and we would analyze performance. And it was very like focused and intense from a very, very young age. But what it also meant was that from a very young age, I was kind of used to being told when like training was going to happen and where I needed to be. And like guided, I guess, through how I needed to improve and grow. And then as I got towards the end of my like professional career, I really wasn't happy in my sports anymore. Like I was suffering quite a lot with my mental health and my dad was also quite sick and my family were in a not very good place. So we moved house very suddenly away from where all of my coaches and sports and everything was. And I was basically given a get out of jail free card. So it was like, Alice, you can stay here and like you can carry on training and do this thing, which in myself, I was like, I don't want to do this. I'm not enjoying it. Or you can come with us because we need the help and support of the family. So we're going to move over there. And I was just so, so happy to have a reason to go that I stepped away from that like part of myself And literally it's taken me until now at 33 years old to really like connect with it again and to acknowledge that huge journey that I went on and how much it's formed everything after. And I think when I stopped doing sports and I kind of turned my back on that and disconnected from it very quickly, it started a chain of events of that kind of becoming a cycle for me. So I took a gap year and I worked in like pubs around my local area. And I got this real thing of like hard work means that you have enough money to have fun. And like, that's cool. And then I changed my idea of what I would do with my future. And I went to do creative writing and literature at uni. But I think I did it because my cousin did it. And I really admired her and looked up to her. Because before I went to university, I had literally read like 5 books. So I had read the books that I needed to do for GCSE and A level. And then I counted the Twilight series on my books that I'd read and the Captain Underpants series, which I was obsessed with when I was a kid. So like, I wasn't really like a literature person.
Yeah, that's quite a change.
Yeah, but I saw my cousin do it and she was also doing creative writing and I thought writing was really cool. And I bought a sketchbook and I started exploring like the arts in this way. And that was probably like a choice that I made for myself, but also I was like mimicking somebody that I admired. And then I was in uni and I was like, okay, I think I want to be a writer. But of course, when you're at university with this, every lecturer or like 90% of them says, it's really hard to find a publisher. It's really competitive. You'll probably never get anything actually into the world. And if you do, like, it's not necessarily going to make you money. So you need to prepare something else. Mm-hmm. So I think before I left uni, I had already accepted the fact that I would never be a writer. So I never even tried, you know, like I didn't fully go for that thing. Mm. And then I finished uni and my dad was more sick than when I had started. And I hadn't thought about what I wanted to do next. And again, I kind of just followed the influence of others. So my mum is an amazing guide for me. Like she is all of the support net that I need. She's so generous with her love and advice and her listening and everything. But this can also be complicated because it then meant for a long time I would kind of reference her for what to do. So I finished uni and I was like, what am I going to do next? I had a chat with my mum. She was like, well, your uncle's a teacher and he really likes it. Your brother's kind of in teaching. It seems like a good career. And in my head, I was like, yeah, it's respected. It's safe. It's like a really established institution. It's kind of creative. It's still to do with literature. It's working with people. All of that sounds really nice. But again, it wasn't like a choice I made for myself. Mm-hmm. And then I was very lucky to get onto a PGC course as like a last minute thing. I think 2 people dropped out. So they interviewed some of us and I got a place, which I was really grateful for. And then on the first week of my course starting, I got a call from my cousin to say that my dad was really sick and that I needed to come meet her at London Waterloo Station and we were going to take the train to go see him together. And I was like, Abby, it's fine. Like, my dad was in and out of hospital all the time. I was like, this happens, don't panic, because she was quite upset. And she was like, no, Alice, this time it's different. Like, you need to come meet me and we're going there. But I really didn't register at all, like, what the situation was. And then we got to my auntie's house and my brother was there and my auntie basically said to us, your dad isn't conscious. We don't know if he's going to become conscious again. We don't really know what's going on, but he's the sickest he's ever been. And if you guys want to, you should go see him in the hospital now because potentially he's going to die. And it definitely wasn't in my head that that would actually happen. But that is, we had like 4 days in hospital with him, with me, my mum and my brother staying there. Like, the Southampton hospital people were just amazing at how much space they gave us to be there. But yeah, in the end he died. And then my family had like this whole new layer. We were already a complicated bunch. And then we had this whole new layer of like mourning and grief. And my mum was suffering so much. And like I said, she was a real point of reference and a guide for me before. So all of the roles were kind of reversed. And it meant those habits that I'd got into of going with other people's ideas kind of strengthened because I just wasn't in a place where I was able to make particularly good decisions for myself anymore. So I finished my PGCE thanks to Richard Quashi, who was my uni lecturer, who was just like an absolute, I genuinely believe he was an angel that was sent to like guide me through that moment in time. And then I started working at a secondary school, Skinners Academy in Hackney. And because that's what you were obviously supposed to do when you finish your training. So I went into a school. And then my first year in the school was really good, but like massively overwhelming. I was there till like 7 or 8 in the evening most days, just trying to like keep up with everything.
Right.
And then in my second year teaching, my head of department gave me and my work wife an opportunity for like a temporary promotion because somebody had gone on maternity. So we could be the head of Key Stage 3, like tracking data and looking after 600 kids for the year, like making sure they were making progress in English, which was like a huge extra workload for somebody that was already staying in work till 7 or 8. But I was like, well, you know, it must mean I'm doing well. And I've been kind of given this opportunity, so I should take it. And it's also going to mean like faster progression, more money. Like, look at you. You're really, really like able to handle all this stuff. And we did make it through to the end of the year, but I was still working till like 7 or 8 in the evening. And I don't think my personal classrooms benefited from me having that extra responsibility.
Yeah.
And then the next year came and that maternity cover was finished. And so my colleague and friend who I love dearly, she was also like, Alice is really good with people. So Alice, would you like to become assistant head of year 10? Which means 300 kids that are going into the first year of their GCSEs. So like way more intense tracking of data, way more responsibility. You have to do more behavioral stuff because like hormones and teenagers are really starting to kick off at that age. And it was just like bonkers. And I think I was doing okay. I mean, I was doing well in my job, but I wasn't okay in myself. And also I was making these decisions because I felt others recognized me, not because I wanted them. So then I went into my last year at Skinners. All of these kids were now their final GCSE year. I was deputy head for them. And at the same time, I was at the end of a 6-year relationship that became really toxic and broke up. So I was feeling like hurt, but also for the first time, like really liberated, because it was this year where suddenly I was like, okay, I see that my work-life balance is off. I feel hugely liberated and free for being out of this relationship. I'm starting to kind of discover the edges of myself. And then I also met my now husband when we took some kids to Austria on a ski trip, and he was there snowboarding, and we just met at a party. And I think that it was like this outside force from a totally different world to mine that had no like historical connection with me that allowed me to see, not that he actively did anything, but you know what I mean? When something else just comes in and you're like, oh, wow, like there's a whole new lens that I'm looking through.
Just and suddenly,
Yeah. And I could see my patterns more clearly for what they were. Like I realized that I was quite close to burnout, that I wasn't really looking after myself. My way of looking after myself was like meeting up with my colleagues or friends to go to the pub and drink, which is obviously very like distracting from the actual issue of what is going on. I wasn't doing a lot of sports. I was smoking just cigarettes, but like way too many. And everything was just like not actually where I wanted to be. So it's like a long, complicated first part of my career. But I think that was that's the getting me up to my more self-aware version of Alice and how I guess all my career steps helped me get to that kind of point.
And then what happened?
And then I still didn't learn my lesson yet. So
it's a journey, isn't it?
Yeah, it really
we're all working there.
So I'm actually doing a healing journey at the moment with this amazing woman called Charisse Bisram. And she made me realize that my next step was kind of in a similar way to when I stopped sports. So I decided that I didn't want to teach in that way anymore, and that I didn't really want to live in London anymore, and that I was quite stressed out by not having any money. So of course I saved up hardcore for a year, and then I went to volunteer at a refugee camp in Calais for 3 months, and then another one in Dunkirk for 3 months, which obviously didn't help the feeling of not having enough money, because it meant that I constricted myself to save up enough. And then when I was there, I was so paranoid about spending anything that I felt constricted in that space as well. And I think basically I made myself like a sacrificial lamb in order to excuse myself for stepping out of that moment in my life. So I was like, I don't want to teach anymore, but I don't want to say I don't want to teach anymore. So I'm going to take a break and I'm going to go volunteer, because, you know, good people with good hearts go and do something like that. And I do actually genuinely really believe in volunteering, but I now see that I kind of used it as a get out of jail free card. And then when I was volunteering in Calais, some of it was like helping the people that were there to kind of not feel hopeless and lost. So it would be some like learning stuff or some craft things. But a lot of it was also just organizing to clothes distributions, food distributions, checking tents that had been donated, that everything works properly. So a lot of it was very practical. But whenever we did the work with people, which was like more my second time that I was there, and I was working with women and families, and I just got so angry and so like disappointed by how unjust and unfair everything is. So when that volunteering experience came to its end, which it was supposed to happen, I was only going to be there for 3 months, but when it finished, I just was like on the floor with my mental health. And I had planned to go to Italy and maybe also to some other places to volunteer, but I just realized like I wasn't capable. I wasn't bringing my best version of myself. I wasn't going to help anyone, like I would just burden the whole thing. So I just stayed in Slovenia for a while, and then I didn't learn my lesson again, and I didn't know what to do for work, because I didn't think about moving to Slovenia and not having the language and not being able to teach in the same way and not being able to like access things like I could at home. And so I copied a friend who was doing something close to transcription. And I did my transcription training because she told me that it was like easy, that the money was okay, and that you can do it remotely. And that was what I needed at that moment in time. But I actually really hated it because I was working on my own the whole time. You're typing like 30 to 40 pages really quickly every day. And it was a really like feast famine cycle where there would be no work for like a month or two. And then you would have 10 days of really intense work, which meant you literally worked 10 days in a row from like 8 in the morning till 6 in the evening to just get all of this stuff out, staring at a computer screen, listening really intensely, trying to capture every word and not make any mistakes. But I was like, well, you move to another country for a man that you love and you left everything behind. So what if you don't enjoy your work? Like, maybe that's the price that you have to pay. Maybe you're never going to enjoy your work again, ever. And so I just went on like this for a while. And then I managed to get a job in a school. So I was transcribing and teaching, but the teaching was very repetitive and not fulfilling because it wasn't like being a classroom teacher at home. It was more performative. I would just come in and speak English and encourage others to speak English, but there wasn't like a clear learning journey, and you didn't have that long-term connection with people like I did in London. And so my brain started ticking and I was like, okay, maybe I don't have to hate work forever because I like the teaching more than I like the transcribing. So there has to be like another step after this, because it can't be that I'm stuck doing the same thing all the time in this school. And then I remembered this wonderful human called Lewis Buxton, who is a poet, and he has his own organization called Toast Poetry. but he used to work for this charity called First Story, and they were in my school. So me and my work wife, Nabila, were in charge of this creative writing group in school as well. And I always really loved Lewis, and I found him really encouraging and helpful. So after like 3 years of not talking to him, I sent him an email and I was like, Lewis, I'm thinking about starting a writing group. Do you have any advice on how to begin? And he was like, well, are you writing anything at the moment? And I was like, no. And then he was like, how can you lead a creative writing group if you're not writing anything? And he just gave me this huge kick up the butt that made me realize I had stopped writing and I'd stopped creating and I'd stopped like so many things. And so from there, I think that was the thing that like springboarded me into where I am now. So it was then just like little steps of like more self-awareness, being more open to the messages around me of what I should be doing from like people like Lewis, but also internally within me. Because then the more I started writing, the happier I felt, the more I started teaching creative writing at the uni here, the more I felt like the power of words again in a way that I hadn't felt them since I'd left uni. And I saw these young people feeling really inspired and I was like, cool, I'm onto something here. And then I found out about like neuroscience, like neuroarts. So the studies around how the arts impact your brain and how it's actually really beneficial for your social, emotional, physical, mental health, everything. And then I was like, damn, this is a thing. Like, I need to keep going in this direction. And so I guess as soon as I had that slightly heightened awareness, I then just tuned into it and it kept becoming more and more trustworthy and clear. And I then became more intentional about what I wanted my business to be, which is what it is now, which is like radically loving, like pretty fluffy in lots of people's eyes, alternative, but like I fully understand the journey that people are going on. And I feel such like love and purpose within my work. And I definitely, if I go back to Alice when I started teaching, never would have thought I would get to the place where I am now, which is really cool.
I can even sense a shift in your energy as you talk about that. That's beautiful to watch.
Yes. Wow. So that's the unshort version, but the full honest layers of that journey.
Yeah, and thank you for sharing.
My pleasure. And what about you, Maria?
Wow, yeah, it's going to be hard to match your storytelling skills now. I'm going to try. So I could see myself in many points throughout your story. I don't know if you would agree, two of the main themes I heard from you were influence of others and expectations, seeing myself in what others expect from me. Or
yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and I can definitely relate to that. So I know if that's the same in the UK. In Italy, we finish middle school and then we are supposed to choose which specialization we want to go next. So my father is a computer scientist and he really pushed me a lot into taking a kind of technical kind of path and journey. And I really admire him. And so I remember he bribed me into taking a technical school. In high school, I started studying electronics and telecommunication. I think we were four women in the first 3 years. And I was the only one for the last 2 years of high school. So it was a very male-dominated environment. I remember the bathroom for female was a broom's storage room where cleaning products were kept. So it was really, it was a really interesting environment to be in my teenage years. And so I was okay. I loved mathematics. I had quite a technical brain. And so the natural next step was taking computer science in university. And I had good grades, similar to what you mentioned before. I felt, okay, I don't love it, but also it's university. I'm not supposed to love this. It's just hard work and everybody's struggling. In one way or the other, I'm doing okay. I wasn't questioning my path too much. But eventually, I got to my bachelor and then I moved to Barcelona and I spent a wonderful year there. And so there were so many beautiful things going on. And I felt, okay, maybe what I'm studying is not like properly fulfilling my art. But again, yeah, it's just studying and it will get better. I kept hearing people saying, yeah, well, once you finish university, you'll have your own money and independence. You can do whatever you want. Everything will be great and you'll see. And that was very true. Like I graduated, I took my master in Barcelona, and then I moved to Berlin. It was very spontaneous. There were a couple of friends in Berlin and they had a free room, a spare room, and I just moved there. And I started finding a job and entered into this tech hub of Berlin, many startups, crazy things going on. My first interview was in a techno party with very interesting people there. And it was definitely an experience. And then less than 1 year later, I was made redundant because the startup I was part of just failed. Mm-hmm. So I didn't, like, it was, again, maybe a little wake-up call. I didn't really know what to do next. But I knew that I wanted to take advantage of that opportunity. It was a kind of a big press button, the big pause button that someone else pressed for me. And so I decided to leave and to start the Camino de Santiago in Spain. So I started the Camino Francés, it's called. It starts from France, from Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port. And I went through the way to crossing all Spain, getting to Finisterre. That's the end of the earth, I guess the translation can be. So the leftmost point in the Spanish peninsula. And that was very special for me. I think that's one of the experiences that defined me and that really helped me to start cultivating self-awareness. So first of all, it's the first time I tried even meditation and yoga. I met people throughout the path that were practicing and I kind of joined them. And for sure, this was special. And then even just, you know, I spent 30 plus days just walking and just finding something to eat and washing my clothes and finding a place where to sleep and repeat. It was very different from the past years of just tech and studying and struggling. Mm-hmm. And so it created a lot of space and time to reflect. And I met many people that were on very different paths. So I like throughout the day, you walk and you meet crazy different people from everywhere in the world. So it was a shake-up moment, exposure of very different things. And also I was feeling something that I never felt before. It was a sense of alignment of, ah, fuck, I'm here. I'm in the present moment. This feels good. I never felt that before. Mm-hmm. And in my brain of a teenager, it felt like, I wasn't a teenager actually. No, I'm just mixing up. But in my brain of a young professional.
Yeah, I also think that we stay in our teenage brain for quite a long time. Yeah, and after we started working, we're still like, you know, I'm still a child, definitely.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, in a way I still am. Yeah, absolutely. So in my brain of a young professional, it felt like walking was something special that changed me. And I felt like, wow, I just have to walk more if I want to be happy. I have to just walk. So walking for me in that moment was the key of happiness. Mm-hmm. I had to go back to Berlin and finding a new job to maintain myself, of course. Unfortunately, that was not a viable career at that point in time. But what I discovered that I brought meditation and yoga back with me to Berlin, and I started finding their places where to practice. And I think my turning point was the same feeling of groundiness and happiness and alignment that I felt walking. I was feeling exactly the same when I was practicing yoga meditation. And so I discovered that it was not walking the missing piece and what I needed for cultivating self-awareness and peace, but it was mindfulness. It was the mindful part, mindful walking part. And so that started changing things and I started practicing more and more. And I still had to, I didn't stop walking. So I was lucky enough to manage to carve myself a little bit of time every year and walking around, but it was not very scalable and I cannot spend the year walking. So yeah, meditation and yoga became gradually bigger and bigger in my life, take more and more space. And eventually I discovered that I didn't love to be a computer scientist. And even though I was in Berlin, I was in the place to be for computer scientists and engineers. It was I wasn't feeling happy. I was constantly burned out. I remember in the worst of my time as a computer scientist, I started passing out. So I, at least once per day, I was losing consciousness in public transportation, at work, at home. And
for how long did that happen?
A few months, I think. It was way too much. It was not okay. Yeah.
But I mean, in the moment when you're living, when you're in that moment of life, it's so easy to normalize really weird stuff, isn't it? But actually now, if you were thinking about passing out every day for months, that would be really alarming.
Yeah, that's not okay, right? And that's a great, great point, because when I was talking to my parents about that, the response of my mom was, yeah, I also used to pass out right after pregnancy. It's a brain. We are just made like this. It's how we respond to stress. And it's not in bed. Passing out is not bad for you. It's a way of our body to reset the system and then you can go again. And yeah, if I think about this now, right? This really is not okay.
Yeah.
But that, I think, again, was another wake-up call, something that made me feel like, oh, I cannot. This is not how I want to live. It doesn't feel good. Even now I'm talking about this, I feel such a heavy weight on my chest, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's not okay. And so luckily, another helper on my journey was Lucia Baldelli, that now is a mentor of mine. She offered me to take a facilitation course into the agile world, into the organizational space. And so as an engineer, I started studying facilitation, that then it became training, that became coaching. And I started digging deeper and deeper into this area. And I felt like, wow, one, I am good at this. Two, studying feels so effortless.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was so curious. I wanted to know more and more. And I was reading and consuming material. And it started becoming huge in a short space of time, became a big part of my life. And my company was acquired by Snap back then. And so it was a lot of transformation happening, and there were new spaces for agile coaches. They were looking for agile coaches to drive this transformation. And so I jumped into it, and I managed to transition from data scientist, as I was working back then, into an agile coach. And then I got my next job as an agile coach. I became a senior agile coach. And this mindfulness side of me was also growing bigger and bigger on the side. And I was realizing how much mindfulness and coaching are so complementary. They blend so well together.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, a couple of years ago, I decided to leave my corporate job and started this adventure of running my own mindfulness and coaching business. I still work a lot with teams and organizations, and I love doing that. I feel I can relate so well with what they're going through and all the shit that happens in such a high-paced environment and so much transformation and change happening all the time. That I'm really grateful to have the chance to do that. And yeah, so I guess this is my condensed version of the journey.
Yeah. And how did it feel for you? So we're thinking about this idea of becoming more self-aware and intentional. And you had the job that was then aligned and making sense, so the agile coaching, and you were working in a space that felt much better and easeful and positive than what you had been before. So what made you then decide to go off on your own? And was that also an easier decision to make? Like, studying became easier when you really knew and you cared about it and your intention was set?
Good question. So there were a few factors there. One was that when I moved to London, I was still working for the company I was working for in Berlin. And after 1 year of contract, they mentioned to me that they weren't sure they could renew my contract. They were looking into that, but they couldn't guarantee me that it would have happened. And so in some way in my brain, this triggered me to start looking for opportunity and possibilities around me. And mm-hmm. when I was asking myself, what would I like to do next? My brain offered me, I would really love to still do coaching, but combine it with mindfulness. Where can I do that? And so I I will never know if at the end my contract would have been renewed or not. But I decided to, yeah, to take a leap of faith and try to combine coaching and mindfulness on my own. And also the yoga part that was also taking more and more space. So I think it was a desire of bringing everything that aligns with me and trying to create something out of there. That was what happened.
Yeah. And I think that maybe that's the thing that both of us have really learned through all of our journeys, is that when you are more awake, intentional and connected, it actually is almost easier to take those leaps of faith. For lots of people, they would have just gone into finding another job, whereas your brain tuned into multiple opportunities, like expansive, creative opportunities that would mean that you're doing work that feels even more aligned again, rather than going for something similar somewhere else. And I think also with me moving from teaching into creative writing into the like more expansive art world, it was that same thing of where can I seek more opportunities to get those feelings that feel totally right. And because they feel right, there is ease there. And because there's ease there, there's trust. And so I can leap again and again and again and like keep trusting myself on this journey.
I love that. Yeah, very well put. So once we learn to go inward, it's hard to stop listening, right? And
yes, and isn't easier. That great? Yeah.
It becomes easier to just go with it. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think so often we think about things like mindfulness and meditation and becoming more self-aware as a really difficult thing. And of course, it is challenging to start off with when you start in tuning into your intuition in this way. But the closer and more intimate that relationship becomes between you and your intuition and your kind of inner wisdom, like you said, it's then hard to not hear it anymore. So we've kind of explored how both of us have gone on these journeys, the lessons we've learned, and I guess the fact that we've had to come back to these lessons over and over again in order to become actually aware and observant and to get in tune with our awareness as well. Let's have a chat about practices. So what do your practices look like, Maria?
So I usually practice yoga at some point during the day. I teach. So when I don't teach, I have my personal practice. And usually I meditate at night, right before bed. But it really depends. It tends to change a lot. For example, if I feel very energized, it's spring, summer, I really love to practice at the beginning of the day. So it's really like part of this self-awareness journey is about understanding where I have the less amount of friction. And so sometimes it's meditating at night, sometimes in the morning, and I just go with that.
Yeah, super nice. I also feel like I've had fallen into this thing of going with less friction as well. So I, a few years ago, read The Artist's Way. Mm. And then I took from The Artist's Way morning pages, which is where you write 3 pages in the morning, just stream of consciousness and get everything out of your head when you start the day. And I did this kind of like almost religiously for like a year. And then I realized that 3 pages takes a lot of time. And sometimes I was starting to feel like I wanted it to be over and to move on to the next thing. So then I was like, okay, well, let's try 1 page. And 1 page, and also just to say, morning pages for me was like the most beautiful, therapeutic, like wonderful practice ever to do. I think it really helped me get to where I am now faster. It kind of, fast tracked me into understanding my vision and how I was feeling and all of this stuff much better. But so I was like, okay, I'll try 1 page. And then I start kind of like, now I don't even need that 1 page rule. I have journaling or free writing. And then also pattern making and coloring is a big thing I do. And then I always think of whenever I make a workshop or something, this is like a creative act in itself. And then when I'm working with people and we're talking about what does this poem mean and how does it make you feel? And then I do the exercises with people in the workshops. So there's lots of space here as well. But then I started more and more recently, like watercolor painting and with pastels, and also exploring on my iPad using Procreate and things. Mm-hmm. And the more I trusted that the practice was there, the more expansive it became and the more fun it became, because it wasn't about this rigid set of rules anymore that I do 3 pages in the morning because of X, and then I go on to blah, blah, blah. And I think you have to have that kind of perhaps more rigid structure for the habit to sink in. And then it's really wonderful that you have this freedom afterwards where it's like, now I can play. Like now the habit is there and I've got all of the space. And it doesn't matter if it's morning or night, because I know deep down, like in the very core of myself, that this helps me grow. And I find wisdom here and I find comfort and ease here and all of this good stuff. So it's no longer a forcing into the habit. It's just completely with you as part of everything.
I love that. And I can absolutely relate to that. Sometimes my practice is, I don't know, 30 minutes long, sometimes 15, sometimes it's just saying, oh, I wish all being well before passing out. And that's fine, right? It has to nourish us and it has to feel good.
Yes. And it has to fit into the availability you have and your energy and each day. And each day we are so different anyway, right? So why should the practice be the same every day if we are constantly changing?
Sometimes giving our 10% is our 100% that day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. I love that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's have a chat and a little think about what we are going to be doing together and what we're offering to people. Yeah. So we're going to be blending movement, breath, mindfulness, and art so that we can help people tap into the wisdom of their bodies, minds, and souls. Maybe you could just tell us a little bit more about this, Maria.
Yes. And we'd love to help professionals thrive personally and professionally and to ripple that influence into our community. And this is not about New Year's resolution. So chatting with Alice before this call, we discovered that we don't really believe into this New Year's resolution kind of format that many people fall into when we approach the end of the year. But it's more about branding ourselves, turning into our intuition, and setting intentional direction for 2025.
Yeah. And combining the yoga and the art together means that there's an opportunity to really slow down and sit and kind of embody how you're feeling at the moment. And I guess also where our desires for the year ahead are kind of lingering. Like, where is that excitement? Where is that fear? Where is the resistance? Where is the flow? And then we're going to move from this space of feeling grounded and aware into a space of creative action. So we're going to actually think about visualizing and building this future that we want to be working towards for ourselves. Because focusing on one little resolution is actually almost distracting us, I think, from the overall vision of where we're going, isn't it? So we want to think about that more really, really intentional, loving, mindful foresight into exactly professionally and personally where we want to be going.
Love it. And so if this resonates, we have a nice event coming up for you on January 23rd. And we titled it Art and Yoga. And we'll be facilitating it. And it will be a chance to connect with like-minded professionals and set the tone for a transformative year grounded in intentions.
Yes, we're going to be leading this yoga and art workshop on January the 23rd from 4 till 5:30 p.m. British Standard Time. And you can head to either of our accounts to sign up for this beautiful workshop, which is just going to set you up fully grounded, prepared and visualizing exactly what you want to achieve in 2025. As we're deep in winter, it's also going to be a lovely, slow practice, just easing into these winter days and releasing any kind of stress or external noise so we can really relax and rejuvenate ourselves as well as we go into this new year. Yes, and this is also a service that we want to continue bringing to people. So this is very much our showcase. We're opening up our superpowers to everybody that is listening. We want you to come experience it, set the new year with all of that good energy and then know that you have two people here that are also a reference point to keep coming back to continue on this journey. Mm. Anything else you want to say before we say goodbye, Maria?
Just, it was a lovely chat. Thank you so much for opening up, and it was lovely to get to know you better and getting what's driving this passion and all the wonderful things we are doing. And yeah, looking forward to collaborating together.
Me too. I feel exactly the same. Really excited. And I'm really excited to help people also see, like we have just gone through today, like those points in their journey where they have grown and developed more awareness, and that they can then use this to create the future that they really want for themselves. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast on intentionality, grounding, art and yoga. You can find Maria on Instagram as Maria Chiatara Coach, and you can follow me under Creative Tea Breaks. Thanks so much again for listening, and we hope to see you on January the 23rd.